Never forget, I had a salesman one time. I was training. We walked in a place. He walked up to the guy and he said, "You don't need anything today, do you?" So I took over the conversation and we went back out to the vehicle and got in. I said, "Do you understand what you just did, son?" He goes, "No, what?" I said, "You answered your own question when you asked him the question." You know, he said, "Well, I didn't think he needed anything," you know, but it's just, but cold calls is so important. Mm-hmm. That will kill a business. I would rather have 100 small customers than 10 big ones. You can lose a small one, they don't bother you. If you lose a big one, they'll hurt that pocket.
What is going on, guys? Dr. Jared Nelson in this house, the podcast, The Better Man, where you can never be perfect, but you can always be better. Today, we have a legendary guest with us today, a legendary salesman. You probably know him. He probably sold you something. Wendell Odin. What's going on, dude?
Man, just too blessed to be stressed. Good to be here with you, bro.
Too blessed to be stressed. I love it, man. I love it. Good to have you in here. We're going to be talking about sales, fate, family. We got a lot of stuff to get into. I'm looking forward to it, dude. So I start everybody with this. You're in the gym, you're chilling, you're at the grocery store, and somebody sees you and they're like, "No, I've seen you somewhere before. Where do I know you from?" What would you say?
I would say, "Well, where do you work at?"
Yeah.
"Well, they tell me, and they don't work where I've been. What do you play golf?" Because I've worked at Robert Trent Jones for 25 years on Saturday mornings. I'm the starter.
Oh, wow.
So then my third one is, "Where do you go to church?"
Mm-hmm.
So it's either going to be work, golf course, or church.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell everybody that either I know them or owe them. So,
Know them or owe them. That's pretty accurate. That's probably pretty accurate. Yeah, yeah. So the golf, I didn't know you golfed.
Yeah. Started about 25 years ago working as a starter, believe it or not. You know, I talk to everybody that pulls up, go over the rules with them, tell them what course they're going to play, and most of the time, "Hey, where are you from?" So we get people from all over the United States and the world playing at Robert Trent Jones. People don't understand that. The locals, they're a small percentage.
And that's in Gadsden?
Right out here in Glencoe at Silver Lakes.
Oh, wow. See, yeah. I don't golf.
Yeah. Well, it's at Silver Lakes. It's okay. Between Glencoe and Anniston. And we, like last Saturday, about 200 by 11 o'clock played.
Wow.
But we get them from all over. England, Scotland, you know. All over the United States. They're always putting advertisements. You know, it is owned by the Retired Teachers Association. That's their investment, the teachers.
Oh, wow.
So they got a great thing. There's 12 courses in the state of Alabama, all the way from Mobile, all the way up to Muscle Shoals.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people listen to this even nationwide. We're in Alabama, a golf course here locally. Spot you work at, people come from all over. That's pretty crazy. They come from overseas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Get a lot of people from overseas. What they call, it's called the trail. People will fly in. They'll start at the top of the state, Muscle Shoals, and they'll play all the way down. For the price, we get so many golfers from the Georgia, Atlanta area,
because
they can drive over here, play in a shorter time than it takes over there because the courses are so crowded and it's less money.
Wow.
So
we didn't even have golf on the thing. We're just talking about golf. But that's pretty interesting. That's actually pretty awesome. Yeah. Well, cool stuff, dude. Well, we're going to start with sales because, like I mentioned in the intro, legendary salesman. I mean, you got selling some pretty crazy stuff, but we'll get into that in a second. I want to start off at the top. Getting into sales, what kind of made you intrigued by that? Like, I can start selling something. What kind of got your intrigue there in the beginning, maybe teens, 20s? When did that start for you?
Actually, graduated from high school when I was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Did a couple of odd jobs, you know. Dad told me, he said, "Son, you want to go to college? Pay for it."
So,
you know, I've always hustled. You know, when I was 12 years old, I was cutting 20 yards at $2 a piece, raking leaves. I've all, you know, born in East Gadsden, same place your dad was born. Over there, we had to work. You want to make money, you get out and work. So I was always intrigued about the working and getting money of my own. So at Mr. Henry Cup, who just passed away, gave me my first opportunity in sales at 19 years old. He had a place called Cup Scrapyard in Atala, and he had started a welding supply business. So I went over and got a job driving a truck, hauling the bottles around.
Mm-hmm.
And after about, 4 or 5 months. It wasn't that long, probably about 3 months. They come out to me and they said, "Hey," said, "if you could get us cards from people that we're not dealing with yet, stopping on places that we're not dealing with, we'll give you $5 for every card, business card."
And this was what 1980. Year? That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
My goal was five a day.
Yeah.
I'm making $25 a day extra.
Yeah.
Well, to me, that's what instilled in me what it's called a cold call. That's my favorite thing to do.
Wow.
Call on people that's not doing business with you. Because you got to get over in sales. There's two things that I train salespeople with that you got to get over: intimidation and rejection.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I've always been able to get over that. Break the ice, talk to the people, you know, and no just means not right now.
Yeah.
That's all it means. You know, like, well, I'm busy. I can't do this and this. Well, you mind if I come back by? You know, most of the time, they're not going to tell you no.
Sure.
But anyway, got in the welding supply business, worked on a truck for about 6-8 months. Never forget, we didn't even have cell phones, man.
Yeah.
We called in Dr. Pepper 10, 2, and 4 every day. Called in at 2 o'clock one day, and the guy that run the place said, "How much more you like, Wendell?" I said, "Well, kind of, you know, am I going to give him a wrong answer? I'm about through, or I'll be a while, you know." Mm-hmm. So I said, I should be through by about 3. He said, "Come to the office. I want to get with you on something." And my heart dropped. What have I done?
Yeah.
Get back to the office, and he said, "Come on, go with me." We drove to Kilpatrick Chevrolet. And on the way up there, he said, "I'm going to put you in outside sales, son." I said, "Really?" He said, "You're going to do exactly what you do now, but you're going to wear a shirt and tie every day, and you're going to go call on people." And so he did. We went up there. Me being not ever having anything in my life much, he said, "Pick out what you want." Well, they didn't have a 4, and that is with El Caminos. That's what he wanted me to get with the El Camino back then.
Yeah.
So I go and look at the one that's a 3-speed with a 6-cylinder. Mm-hmm. He walks over and goes, "Boy, you don't want to drive that all day." I said, "Okay." So he got me the nicest one, you know, paid me X amount, gave me a credit card to take somebody to lunch every day and fill your car up and make us some money. So that's where I got started, man. I've been going ever since.
And you were how old when that happened?
About 20, right at 20 years old.
Okay.
So just blessed, really blessed that I got an opportunity like that. But a lot of it goes back to, you probably don't notice it, but as a young child, I was born with a hole in my eardrum and I had a damaged eardrum.
Mm.
I always got made fun of because I couldn't talk plain. Yep. I always stayed in trouble in school because of getting in fights and all that stuff, but I could read lips. I always look at people. So I had a gentleman tell me one time, he said, "I noticed when you talk to me, you really look at me." And I told him the story. I got it fixed. I went to Memphis, Tennessee. I was the third one to have it done.
Wow.
At Shea Clinic. Shea Clinic was about the size of 2 bedrooms.
Yeah.
Dr. Robertson, the ear doctor back then, a long time ago, I was 14, told my dad, said, "Hey, this boy's got some problems." I said, "But I can't do any more. I've done put in 12 sets of tubes. They're not going to work." So we go up there. He's straight out of the Air Force. He said, "I can fix that." We go up there. They fix it. I've been blessed. So I had to go through speech therapy and all that to learn because I pronounced the words the way that I heard them.
Right.
So I had to go through all that. So it helped me in my sales because I stay focused when I talk to somebody. I don't look down. I don't look around. I'm always looking at them. And it's just a habit of reading lips.
Yeah.
So.
That's a pretty amazing story. I never really knew that about you.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't know it. You know, I stayed in trouble all the time in school.
Oh, really?
But the teacher actually found it.
Yeah.
Said, "I got him on the front row and he does great. But I put him in the back and said, he's just like he ain't even listening to me."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't hear him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Man, teachers are a blessing if you really think about that. I mean, the job they have, people could have let you skim through.
Oh,
and never address that.
You know,
but for somebody to stand up and say something.
The bus would come by and give you that hearing test and stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess somebody on that bus addressed it to her and she put 2 and 2 together and she called my parents in. But I've always had ear problems when I was little all the time. You know, so, man, they're trying to put tubes in my ear in the office. without putting me to sleep or taking them out. And, you know, they're trying to hold me down and all this.
Yeah.
But I was blessed. And I called the Shea Clinic years ago. Oh, it's probably been 25 years ago. And today, I was going to see if I need to come for a checkup. And they said, well, let's see if you can pull up your record. And they couldn't find it. And I told them, I said, oh, okay. I said, what's wrong? I said, I just need, ain't nothing wrong. Don't come up here.
Mm-hmm.
They just go to your local doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So I've passed all kind of physicals and all kind of stuff. So
gotcha.
Been blessed. That was a good doctor.
Well, you said 20 years old. You know, you had a guy. We talk about mentorship often on the podcast. You know, it seems like a mentor was pretty impactful to you at a young age there.
Yeah, to give me a chance like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've had some great mentors. I'm going to tell you, you know, like just a lot of the guys. And I've always, a lot of salespeople don't want to ride with representatives. I took everyone I could because I was like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you make your sales presentation, I do, from different people in the industry the smarter than I am.
Sure.
I take a little bit from all of them, and I make my presentation.
Well, that's how you learn. I mean, you got to have people smarter than you. If you're the smartest person in the room all the time, where's the growth going to go? Right. You're not going to grow.
Right. Yeah. And I talked to a guy several years ago. He's probably worth $140, $50 million, and we're talking, and I said something to him. I said, I think one of the biggest things, if I could go back and get a college education. He goes, no, you don't. He said, what you got is priceless.
Yeah.
He said, that is not worth that. That's on the wall. It will never get you what you got.
Yeah.
And that made me feel so good, because coming from a man like that, that he only had 11th grade education. He didn't even been in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and he's worth that. But like he said, I don't know it all, but I hire people that does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very well said, man. We talked about sales, cold calling. Talk a little bit about that. You said that's one of the most important, the top two things.
Yeah.
Why is it so important, and how do you do it?
There's only two ways to grow a business. You expand what you got, or you get new business. Mm-hmm. No way to get new business is cold calling. People don't want to do that. Never forget, I had a salesman one time I was training. We walked in a place. He walked up to the guy, and he said, you don't need anything today, do you? So I took over the conversation, and we went back out to the vehicle and got in. I said, do you understand what you just did, son? He goes, no, what? I said, you answered your own question when you asked him the question.
Right.
I said, you know, he said, well, I didn't think he needed anything, you know. But it's just, but cold calls is so important.
Mm-hmm.
That will kill a business. I would rather have 100 small customers than 10 big ones. You can lose a small one, they don't bother you. You lose a big one, they'll hurt that pocketbook.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Makes total sense. So cold calling, what was the other big point? You have to cold call for sales?
Yeah.
And what was the other thing you said earlier?
Well, I was talking about there's two things you got to get over, rejection and intimidation.
Rejection.
Yeah.
Rejection. So that goes hand in hand with the cold calling. I think that's the biggest deal is people don't want to cold call because they're like, I don't want to annoy them. I don't want to be rejected.
That's it.
All that. So how do you get over that?
Well, what's the easiest thing to do? Get somebody to talk about yourself.
Yeah.
You can get them to talk about yourself.
That's it.
You're in there.
That's it.
That's it. Find something in there, whether it's a football pennant or a picture or a family picture or anything. And, hey, what do y'all do here? The other day, I made a call on a company. And I just asked the guy, I said, hey, exactly what do y'all do here? Well, come on, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
That was my key.
Yeah.
He took me from the front door to the back door. And I'm sitting there with just my eyes looking all over the place, thinking of the things I could sell him.
Mm-hmm. That was a Dale Carnegie book. I'm sure you've read a lot of Dale Carnegie.
Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
But there was one, it was about that, of how to win friends or something like that. And one of the top things was let somebody talk about themselves.
Yeah.
Because if you just sit there and feed them information, if you show intrigue and interest and let them talk about themselves, they're much more likely to engage in conversation.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest things, too, is people don't really care about how much you know because they know how much you care.
Yeah.
So if you show that you're genuinely caring about their interest or their family or something, they appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main thing that, you know, just. And my philosophy always be under promise, over deliver. Mm-hmm. When I get out there, and like today, guy gave me an order, and hey, I said, when do you need it? He said, well, I need it at least by Monday. Well, I said, I'm going to see if we can get it there by Friday, okay? Well, they're actually delivering it tomorrow, and I knew they would. So what that does is it makes me look that, hey, man, I needed that Monday, and he got it here on Thursday.
Oh.
And that's the key, is too many salespeople will say, oh, we'll have that tomorrow, and you don't have that control.
Right.
You know, so that's my big thing, under-promise, over-deliver. If you'll do that, and you'll, you know, people are going to like you.
I think the beginning of this podcast is already, like, probably worth a lot of money, and we're giving it away free.
Yeah.
We probably need to charge for this knowledge, honestly. Well, this is some serious stuff. This is awesome, dude. What motivated you to start in sales? You said kind of the car sales and all that. Is that kind of the key that got you into it? What kind of kept you going after that?
Well, what got me going in sales, you know, being 17 and graduated from high school, I moved out on my own at 17 years old. We're going to be 18 till October. So I'm a kid, and I've moved out on my own. So what am I doing? I'm putting up fence for my uncle. I knew then I didn't want to put up fence the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's hard work. But he gave me an opportunity, and I did. And I think you hit it on me about there driving that truck with all them bottles on it and backing up to places that's never bought from us. And I go in and introduce myself. And I felt like, you know, I mean, I'm a kid, you know, I'm 19 years old, but they listened to me, and I said, hey, could I get a business card from you? I said, we don't do business with you, but I'd like to see what I could do for you. Quick story. There was a place in Pell City I went by. They was breaking ground. They just got the walls put up. It was called Sandy Hill back then. They was out of New York. I didn't know it. I pull up, I walk through the place, and I mean, there's just people working everywhere, but it's not open. So I said, hey, who would I need to talk to here that's over this? They said, well, what do you do? I said, I sell welding supplies and welding machines and everything. That guy right over there. There was a guy over there in New York. I walked up here with my southern slang, you know, and introduced myself as a kid. I'm a kid. I'm probably about 22, 23 years old then, been in outside sales a little bit, handed my card, and I said, hey, I'd love to have an opportunity to quote you on. What are y'all going to do here? He told me. They're going to need like 8 or 10 welding machines, all the supplies, big account. Don't think much about it. Put it on my call report. So about 3 months later, the owner called me in. He goes, hey, you remember stopping down in Pell City? I said, yeah. He said, they just ordered about 10 welding machines, gases, and all this. He said, that's what a cold call does.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's called me, I put a card in his hand.
Yeah.
Gave him a little bit of time. But that was probably one of my biggest sales when I started, that something that, and that it's all about, like, when I was a kid, I'd go to my granddaddy and stay a week and farm. You know, he had 500 acres. But it's kind of like you till the ground, cold calls, and you throw them seeds out, and before long, man, they'll start coming up. Not all of them, but a lot of them will come up. And so that's what it reminded me of. I threw that seed out to that guy. He kept that car. That's what's amazing. He kept that car, and then he called the office and placed that order. So, you know.
Yeah, I never really thought about sales as like that, kind of like gardening.
It is, man. You got to plant them seeds.
It's like when
you're witnessing, you know. You talk to people about Jesus and you witnessing to them. That's all you're doing is planting a seed.
Yeah.
Planting a thought in their mind.
Yeah.
So
it's true.
You know,
it's true.
But you go back to about reading books. I've never been a big reader.
Really?
Never been a big reader.
In the manosphere space, like entrepreneurship, they're a bit like read 50 books a year and stuff. Yeah. That's kind of crazy that you're very successful and really haven't really read that much.
You know, I was in Las Vegas one time at a big convention. I used to do a lot of trade shows, and I'd be all over the United States. And I was sitting at a table with the speaker. There's about 300 people there, and somehow I got put at the table with the speaker.
Oh, wow.
So I looked over. He started a conversation with me. And after a little while, he goes, how long have you been in sales? I said, ah, 5-6 years, you know. He goes, I notice you really look at me. You really pay attention. So I told him a story about why I pay attention, because I read lips.
Mm.
He said, I'm going to give you a piece of advice, son. I said, okay. Read 2 newspapers a day. And I started reading 2 newspapers. He said, keep up with current events. But now you don't, because it's all on your phone.
Yeah.
But back then, I'd read 2 newspapers. But going back to reading, I read the Bible every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Study the Word. I do 5 devotions. And then I do a thing that comes through on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes 28 days to create a habit, 28 days to break a habit. And I started doing that. And now, even when I go on vacation, wherever I go, my books go with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I do is you got to take your cross up every day. So I'm taking it up, but I'm feeding myself. I want to feed myself with this so that I might be an impact out on the road that day.
Of course. So, mm-hmm. We'll definitely get into faith a little bit later, but that's great, man. So the newspaper thing, how did that impact you? Like him saying, read 2, what was the purpose of doing that?
Well, I think he did it to make sure I knew what the current events were. When you walk in, you can, you know, a lot of people, they start that stagnant talking and stuff. But if you can't get them to talk about yourself, their selves, that's what he said. Talk about current events.
Because mm-hmm.
you might strike something up with that. At least you know what's going on in the world
mm-hmm.
and around you.
I think, like you say, it's all about intrigue. Like getting somebody in there. That's like it. You got to give them a reason to talk to you.
Right.
You know, just saying, would you like to buy this? I must be good. I mean, you right. might win 1 in a million, but overall, you're probably not going to win right. much.
Usually it takes. And here's the thing about it. I had a guy one time ask me, he goes, I notice on your sales cards, you don't have nothing but your first name, Wendell. I said, well, remember, people don't remember but 7 things when you talk to them. Average of 7 things. I don't care if they remember my last name. I've got a very unique first name.
Yeah.
So just remember Wendell. No matter what they need, call me. So, you know, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. They want to do this big presentation. Well, people don't remember that stuff. About mm-hmm. 7 things, all they remember. You know, one of the best sales I ever had. I'll tell you another one. I was at a hospital, and we had a brand new product out. And this guy's been tough. He'd been tough because the people that went in before me, he had a bad taste in his mouth. And he said, you're going to be just like all the other ones. You're going to come by here, and then you're going to quit coming by. And it's about my 8th call. Sometimes it takes 5 to 7 calls to get somebody. If you walk in and somebody gives you an order that day, you better be worried, because the next guy in behind you that sells the same thing, if you're a dime cheaper, he's going to buy from you.
Mm.
So anyway, I walk in and I had a brand new product. I put it on his desk. I just set it on his desk, never brought it up. We talked about everything. We talked about football, talked about his kids, talked about work, everything. I said, well, Steve, I got to go, buddy. I said, man, it's been a pleasure. I said, thank you for your time. He said, you ain't going nowhere. You tell me what's in that bottle. And he ended up buying 2 cases.
All right. So dealing with rejection, that's a big, big deal in sales.
Yes. Yes.
You get rejected. How do you deal with it?
Well, no, rejection, like I said earlier, really, if they say no, it just means not right now.
Yeah.
So you just got to go back, regroup, you know. Sometimes you have to find another way to get in, maybe. You know, if you're at the back door and you get the rejection and they tell you, hey, no, you know, you can't come through here. We're not going to talk to you. You got to go up front. And then you go up front and you get rejection. Sometimes you just, you know, sometimes a market's not really the right word, but a network with some guys that I know that's selling. Mm-hmm. Hey, how's the best way I can get in there?
Because
mm-hmm. if I get rejected, man, that
so what you're saying
me,
is rejection is motivation, right?
To me, it is.
Yeah,
to me, it is. It's anybody like, can go in there and just, you know, try to sell something, but we get rejected, man, that's motivation to me. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And that's what it should be. If you're a true salesman, and, you know, people say, well, you know, customers, all of mine are relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people I've been dealing with for 35 years, mm-hmm. and they'll call me and they'll say, do you carry this? Or, you know, where I can get it? Yeah, I can get it for you. No problem. I don't ever tell them no till I've exhausted all of my resources,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, and that's what you do. You try to be not everything to one person, but 99%.
Well, you got to have tough skin a little bit. I think in sales, you have to not take things personally, I'm sure. Yes,
right.
Yeah, because if you take a no personally, you get emotion involved, it's kind of out the window.
Oh, yeah, that or rejection, you know. And I've had salespeople that I've been training, you know, and they'll call, I just don't think I can do this, and I just don't like the rejection. Because, you know, you might make 10 calls and get 7 or 8 no's.
Yeah.
But sometimes that last one might be the best one you've done all day.
Mm-hmm.
After you done been rejected, you know, you got to get up and go again.
Yeah, you got to have some stamina, some endurance there for sure. Yeah, good stuff, dude. What makes a good salesperson? If you can name some traits specifically, like people you looked up to, like back when you were younger, when you had a mentor or whatever, people that you looked up to, what made them great?
I think what makes a salesman great is being a good listener, listening to your customer, because I learned all I knew in the different fields that I've been in from customers.
Mm-hmm.
I sold welding supplies for 10 years and I never struck an arc. You ain't got to know how to drive a car to sell a car.
Yeah.
So it's listening, finding their needs and their wants, and don't try to oversell them, and don't try to think that you know more than they know. Mm-hmm. You always let them try to lead the conversation. But to me, being honest is the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Communication. You got to get back to people.
Mm-hmm.
When they call you and they say, hey, do you have so-and-so or can you get so-and-so? Make it urgent. Make it urgent. Get back to them. And just getting over fear and intimidation, you know, the rejection and intimidation, you got to get over them things.
Yeah.
You know, and that, to me, that's what makes a good salesman. And going back to mine is under-promise and over-deliver, you know,
How did you get over fear in the beginning of sales? And I'm sure, you know, it's not just like you jump in and you're a master at it. How do you, when you started out, how did you get over that fear? Fear of like even talk, some people are afraid to talk to people.
Right.
And they're like, I want to get into sales. I can't even hardly complete a sentence when people get nervous and all that.
Well, you know, I've always been one that was never short of words.
Yeah.
You know, growing up. And then, you know, like I said, with my granddad, I'd work all week at his farm. And on Fridays, we went and sold the produce. That was my favorite day because, you know, we'd go everywhere, all over Gadsden because he was from Blount County. And I loved sitting in the back and hollering and telling people what we had and how much it was. And just, you know, and my dad sold potato chips. You know, he's a potato chip salesman for 30 years. And I worked with him every Saturday from the time I was old enough to get up in the truck.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's just.
Did you know Beard? A guy that sold, he was like my great uncle through marriage. Beard was his name. He sold Lays.
Really?
Yeah.
Your daddy was there from the time I was a little boy till.
Was it Lays?
Yeah, left. Right
away.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure he knew him then.
Yeah. But it's. And I think it was that brought up in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on Saturday mornings, me and my dad would go to a restaurant and all the other vendors would be there. Then we'd end up at all the big grocery stores on Saturdays and they'd say, there's a little chip man. And I'd always come back home. And my sister would be waiting because she knew that I done loaded the truck up. I'd have all kind of bread and snacks and all this stuff that, you know, I'd beat all other guys out of, you know, because I'd go to every one of their trucks and say, hey, you got any samples, you know?
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome, man, yeah. Yeah, but I think kind of that exposure, I'm sure when you're young, probably helped a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did. It did.
Yeah, just plus, being exposed to people, knowing how to talk to people and all that.
You know, because funny sales story. 15 years old, man down the street, had an old car for sale. Never forget it. Me and my two buddies. I might not have been 15. I didn't have a permit or a driver's license, and they didn't either. So Herman was his name. I walked down there, and I said, hey, Mr. Herman, you want to sell this car? He goes, yeah, I want to sell this car. I said, well, I know somebody might want to buy it. He said, well, keys in it, take it. So I drive it over to Broad Street. Over there by where they do the Cobra cars,
mm-hmm.
there's a little car lot over there that's got an owning on it. owning kind of on kind of close to Burger 101. Still there.
Okay.
And I pulled up and I said, "Hey guys, this is my uncle's car. I'm going to see if y'all'd like to buy it." And they looked at it and everything. They said, "Yeah, it's a nice car." And I think Herman told me he wanted $500 for it. So they're just in the back seat rolling. They're going, "We can't believe you're driving this car up here." You know, yeah. So I get out, talk. I end up selling it for $700. So I said, "I got to go get my Uncle Herman and we'll come back." So we did. And he said, "Well, I'll give y'all boys the other $200 then for doing that." You know, so they just could not believe it because I gave him like 25 or 30 apiece and I kept the other, you know, but they said, "We can't believe you did that." So I think it was instilled in me just to sell, you know. It's just, I think you're born a salesman.
I really think so, too. I mean, you hear a lot of stories about that. You see them on a Shark Tank, you know, Like, you see these little kids, like entrepreneurs and all that, just starting up. It's like, it's a personality trait almost. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Kid was in the mall one time selling M&Ms. Never forget it. Mm-hmm. They were little. I have two daughters. She said, "Daddy, how much are these?" I said, "They're $5 for $5. He said, "Well, they told us it's $1 a piece." I said, "Don't say that. Say $5 for $5.
Yeah.
They sold all theirs quick.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it's a big joke now, you know, because they're saying, "Yeah, Daddy's trying to get us in sales when we was kids."
Yeah. But that's the real thing. You see stuff like that. Wording is very important because a lot of people don't even think about it. They're like, "Oh, that's a good deal. I'll buy it."
Yeah. It's the same thing. Let me give her $5.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome, man. That's crazy. That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, people see that wording of like $1 for $1 or $5 for $5. So, $5. I get five of them. Yeah. That's a better, and it's the same exact thing, but people don't think about it. Right. It's almost just kind of like a sales tactic.
Yeah, it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Cool stuff. Let's see. We already talked about, greatest sales win. The biggest win you've ever had. I want to hear this one.
Okay.
Now you just talked about you had a 23, you had a big one on that. But what was the biggest
one I ever had?
Yeah.
And you're going to like this.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Cold call. Walk into Irondale, Alabama to USA Ready Mix, owned by Bear Brock Jr.
Oh, wow.
Guy by the name of Ben Childress. I believe that's his last name. Nice young man. Straight out of college. Just sharp guy. Introduced myself and I said, "Hey, I'd love to bid on y'all chemicals and stuff." He goes, "It's funny you come in here." He said, "Because we're about to send bids out." I said, "Really? From the panhandle of Florida to Knoxville, Tennessee. I've got how many locations?"
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Big, big account. So he gives me opportunity. So I work the numbers, you know, and I carry it back to him. Back then, you didn't have emails. We hand wrote them or typed them or whatever.
This was when now?
This was probably... It was probably 90s.
Okay.
You know, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Probably right before computers hit big and all that, you know.
Mm.
And we might have had them, but we didn't have it, you know, with our company. So, anyway, I turn it in. So, I call about 2 or 3 days later. I said, "Hey, Ben, how do I look?" He said, "Between me and you, you look pretty good." He said, "But it's not my decision."
Mm-hmm.
Said, "You know, there's people above me that's got to make this decision." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I hope the best." I said, "Because, you know, my selling point was we had a location in Mobile. We had one in Birmingham. We had one in Gadsden. We had one in Atlanta. We had one in Knoxville and Chattanooga. All the areas they was at."
Yeah.
And I said, "We can work this. Mm-hmm. We can work it and work it good." You know, so I put in all my proposal what we'd do. The family, we went on a cruise. We're going on a cruise. And I get off the boat, my phone starts working. So I call the vice president of the company and I said, "Hey, how's everything going? You know, I just got off the boat." He said, "Well, I need to tell you some news." I said, "What is it?" He said, "You got the USA Ready account." Bam. I'm talking about home run.
Yeah. Probably pretty excited at that point.
Yeah. That was my biggest ever as far as numbers, you know, monthly numbers. That was a big thing.
Awesome, dude. That's awesome. So, biggest fumble.
Oh, man.
What's the biggest loss in sales that you've ever had? What do you think?
I've had a lot of them. I really, you can't get them all. And that's where you got to just pick yourself up. You know, I've lost some big bids before. And well, I'll tell you one. I had a big bid on some stuff that was going to this a city, a municipality.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to do the quote, and the owner said, "No, don't fool with that. We'll let so and so do it." Well, if you've ever done bids, it tells you on there what you need to do, either one or two. So when he did the bid, it was for two large pieces of equipment, and he only priced it. Let me get this right. It was for two pieces of equipment, and he put the price either somehow he got it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go back by to check it, the guy goes, "Who did this bid?" And I said, "Why?" He said, "You had the award, but you had it done wrong. You had it right backwards." I said, "Are you serious?"
Yeah.
But I couldn't blame the guy. I don't blame people like that. I mean, that's either here or there, man.
Yeah, you mistakes can't get them happen. Yeah, you mistakes can't get them all, happen. Yeah, you can't. You can't. How do you overcome that? Like, people sometimes losses crush people. Like, when they lose it, when they fumble big, they're just like, "I quit," whatever. How do you keep going after a loss like that?
Just go find you something else.
Yeah.
I mean, just pick up and go. Yeah. You know, what's, you know, like if you lose a game, I mean, why are you going to dwell on the past? Learn from what your mistake was. And but guess what? I've never done that again. Mm-hmm. I've never let somebody else do a quote for it. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Because
with
a mistake, I can point the finger at myself. Yeah. And you got to remember, when you point the finger, there's three more pointing back at you.
That's very true.
So, you know.
Very true. That's a big thing in medical, too. I've experienced things, and I'm kind of very controlling about certain aspects of some things, how they go. Yeah. And some people are like, "That's..." But I've seen things go wrong, and I've seen things potentially go wrong.
Right.
And I'm like, this cannot happen. It cannot happen. That's why it has to be this way and all that. And you just learn from the experience.
That's,
you know, I think
it.
With sales and all that. Yeah. But that's
I've
big
learned.
What you said, dwelling on the past. I think some people make mistakes and they just get stuck on that.
Yeah.
They just can't get over it.
Right.
You know, but you have to acknowledge it, acknowledge the mistake, and then learn from it and move on. That's the only way you can grow. And you learn from mistakes. Like, if you never mess up, you'll never learn anything.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I, you know, kind of like growing up, if, you know, I used to get beat up a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, I learned from them that I shouldn't be jumping on guys bigger than me, a lot bigger than me.
Yeah.
So I said that one time to a guy. I said, "Yeah, I've been beat up by some good people." And this little guy, he had a short man syndrome. And he goes, "I've never been beat up." I said, "Well, you ain't never got in a fight." I said, you know, I said, that was my constant thing. Just somebody made fun of me. I didn't care how big he was, what they was. I went after him. And I learned after a while, I need to just walk away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good that you learned that, for sure. Well, yeah. Yeah. That's cool, man. Well, good deal. Getting leads in sales, big deal in sales, kind of getting leads, letting people, you know, talk to you about stuff that could potentially happen in sales and all that. How do you go about getting leads?
I get 90% of my leads from customers.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them. Like the other day, I was at a guy's place and he goes, "Hey, you deal with so-and-so down here?" And I said, "Where's he at?" He told me how to get to him, and I went down there, and I used him as a reference, and the guy started dealing with me. So a lot of leads are like that. A lot of them are, there's some programs you can go on through Google and stuff, and, you know, not leads, but just find where people are, you know. Yeah. And that's what I do. A lot of mine is word of mouth, and that's the best. That is the very best. I get people call me. I get at least once or two a week saying, "Hey, oh, so-and-so told me to give you a call. I could get so-and-so from you." Yeah, you sure can. Where you at? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an insurance guy on here, episode 15, Ricky Phillips on the podcast. Shout out. He said friends and family is the worst.
Oh, yeah.
He said that is the absolute worst. Would you say the same?
Yeah, because, you know, insurance, car sales, all that, that's what they want you to do. All your friends and family, then when you use all them up, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And you're going to make some of them mad.
That's true.
You know, my dad, after he left Frito-Lay after about 30 years, he went into insurance. And he never would talk to any relatives about insurance unless they come to him. And I asked him about that later on in life. We talk about sales, and he said, "I didn't ever want them to think that I was pushing something on them."
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dave Ramsey, you know, Dave Ramsey,
right.
He talks about that often. You know, finances and family really don't mix that well.
Right.
You know, you let family borrow money, Thanksgiving dinner don't taste the same and all that, but it's a real thing. I mean, once you mix family and friends and money and all that, creates a lot of problems.
Well, another thing going back in my life, my dad, he's the oldest boy out of 10 kids. He never would loan anybody any money.
Yeah.
Never co-sign with them. His favorite saying was, if you can't get it on your own, you don't need me.
100%.
Well, my dad never loaned me money.
Same.
My dad never co-signed with me.
Same.
My daddy never bought me a vehicle. I was graduated from high school at 17 years old and went out and bought my first vehicle.
Wow.
But it made me who I am today.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem, you know.
Yeah. The biggest problem. Go ahead and finish that.
That's the biggest problem of today. We're spoon feeding these kids, and I got a problem with it. My two girls, I got two girls I'm blessed with, 40 years old, 36 years old. They went to work at 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Both, one of them was a cheerleader, one of them was a majorette, but Johnny at Top of the River worked around their schedule. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, girl, y'all want a vehicle? You need to pay half car payment or the insurance, whatever you want to do. And today they'll tell you it made them who they are today.
Yeah.
You know, because they learned responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm all about it. Yeah, I'm all about it. Now, my dad, I will say this, you know, my parents, they bought me a truck, but it was a little Chevy S10.
Yeah.
99 S10.
Yeah.
Now, I had friends that had the big Silverado Z71, all that. And I was like, man, well, I want a truck like that or whatever. But I was like, I want that. I'm going to go work and go get it.
Right.
It wasn't just given to me. Right. And I think now there is a lot of that, unfortunately, where people are just given stuff and then the work ethic. Why do you have to work? Why do you? You have no incentive better than that.
That's it. And my daddy's favorite saying, and I passed it on to my kids, is it's not what you make, son, it's what you spend.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why a lot of people are in trouble. I mean, I don't know the statistics. I could look it up in a second, but paycheck to paycheck. People,
so sad.
I mean, it's
so
75% of Americans are some crazy, like, I couldn't imagine that. I just
couldn't imagine
that. Like, if I don't get this next check, I'm not going to eat. I just,
right.
I feel for people. I really do. It's crazy.
But, you know, it's just like, I was the youngest one in my class when I graduated. So all my buddies was older. They all had vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up real quick. Because I'm intrigued. All right, what percentage? 55 to 63% of Americans are likely living paycheck to paycheck. 3 in 4 Americans who earn less than $50,000 are living paycheck to paycheck. So 75% of people making $50,000 or less,
right,
are living paycheck to paycheck. And I don't know, you know, a lot of people like will say, "Manage your money better."
Yeah,
like all that. And now, like, if you make $50,000 for a household, I don't see how it's possible.
Right.
I just don't see, like, a house payment and then food and, like, how are you making it?
Right. How are they making it?
I don't know. You know. I just really don't know because the times and stuff, it's crazy. But I think that's a big cry from a lot of people that are in better positions. Well, you're not managing your money right.
Right.
But maybe they don't have the income. And, yeah, you need to get up and go work and improve yourself and level up and all that. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes it's just not an easy answer, I think.
It's not. And another thing, you need to base everything you have off of one income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you do that.
Both incomes in there and say, hey, yeah, we'll make it. We'll be fine.
Yes. Yes. I agree with that. Like, if you get married, too, spending one of your incomes.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a whole income to play with, vacations, investing, retirement, all that, that's a good place to be.
Right. Very 100%, good.
100%. Yeah. A lot of people can't do that, but I think that's a really good place to be. Very, very good point. What would you tell yourself if you started over? If you started over sales completely, we're still in the sales thing. What would you tell yourself if you started over completely and you're starting out of sales? How could you do it?
What would I tell myself?
What would you tell if you now, if you saw your 20-year-old self and you're about to start sales, think of all the mistakes you made and all that in sales and all that. What would you tell yourself?
I really don't know because I think I learned from the mistakes and you got to make mistakes to learn. So, you know, would I change something? Yeah, we all would change a few things, but I think I'm a better person from the stumbles and the falls that I've made, you know, and I'm really proud that I didn't have many jobs, you know, I just didn't do a big job turnover thing, you know, that's a big thing in sales. 'Cause you get so many people now that I heard a guy the other day talking about, he'd been interviewing and he said, this guy's had 8 jobs in 4 years.
Yeah. That's our generation. Well, yeah. I mean, my age and younger.
I'm going, really?
It's changed, man.
And wow.
And you're how old, Wendell?
I'll be 65 this year.
Medicare.
Yeah.
I'm going on Medicare. Yeah. Congrats.
But no retirement in sight.
Yeah, oh, really?
Oh, no. Lord, give me my health. I'm going to work.
Yeah.
Man, I want to work.
Yeah.
I got a buddy of mine. He's 70-something and just every day. He loves it. He's in sales. Because you're basically your own boss.
Mm.
You can make what you want. Get out there and work.
Yeah.
Get out there and hustle.
I reference all the time on the podcast, Dr. John Deloney. He's a clinical psychologist, but he talks about that. People that retire, people are like, I just want to retire and live on a beach all day. You go about 4 or 5 days of doing that and you're like, I'm bored. You need something driving you. And I think you see that a lot in retirement. People get out and they just sit.
Well,
like they just waste.
Perfect example. Out there at Silver Lake. I've been out there 25 years. I've seen a lot of guys come through.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen them retire at 59, 60 years old, 61, 62. Now they're working 3 jobs. I'm going, why did you leave the job that you had, and now you're working 3 jobs?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, and I want it. I don't see myself slowing down because I'm such a routine guy. You know, 5 days a week I work. Saturdays I go to the golf course and work. Sundays I'm at church greeting. So I love it. I love
people. There might be a different side to that, though. I mean, I think you would have to ask them. Maybe they were tired of their job. You love sales. You love doing it. You still love it. You've done it forever. You still love it. Some people are incarcerated by their job.
The guys like the Goodyears and the steel plants and even your dad's job. Getting in and out of that truck. That's got to get monotonous. All day long. And I understand people like get retired. I really do.
Yeah.
But I do what we're doing right now every day.
Yeah.
You know,
I can tell. That's what I said when you first came to the house. You just started talking and all that. It just flows, man.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and that's my problem. My biggest problem is I say what's on my mind and I don't need to say that all the time.
Blessing and a burden, though.
Yeah.
it's a blessing and a burden. But some people, you never know what they think. They don't say anything. So there's a balance there. You got a little balance there.
Right.
But I think in retirement, obviously I'm 31. I mean, I'm not hopefully not close to retirement. I don't want to be. But you have to have purpose in your life, you know. And often people's job becomes their sole purpose.
Life.
Like we're going to talk about faith in a little bit and all that. Faith is a big part of your life. You have avenues, you know, the golf course, all that. You still do sales. But you need to have purpose in your life. And so I think you see that with a lot of retired people. You might even know people like that. You know, they get out and then they just kind of lose, you know, any assertiveness at all because they have no purpose.
Right.
You know, and I think that's important to have.
Yeah, I think it's very important. You got to have reason to get up.
Right.
Reason to get up and go.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just going somewhere and sitting drinking coffee half the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Dude, we dropped some gems for sure. Yeah, at drink coffee at Jack's.
Yeah.
Got the guys drink coffee at Jack's, man. That's legendary folks over there. But appreciate you talking about sales, dude. Seriously, we could have sold this podcast. We're going to give it out free.
Yeah.
But we dropped some gems on here, man. Awesome that you did the stuff in sales. We're going to go ahead and get into faith. We already talked about that a little bit in the beginning. Just start at the top, dude. Your Christian faith is very important to you. I know on social media, you're very active posting about your faith and everything like that. Share your testimony of when you came to Christ and about your faith.
I came to Christ at 14 years old. You know, I was raised, I had a real serious drug problem when I was young because my parents drug me to church every time the doors open, you know, so that's kind of a joke, you know.
A drug, but you don't mind. I seriously thought this was about to take a turn. It's like, Wendell, I did not know this.
Yeah. No, but
that's hilarious.
Born in East Gadsden, you know, my granddaddy was a Baptist minister, had an uncle that was a preacher. My daddy was a gospel singer. He had a gospel quartet for 40 something years. I've never been at a family function that God has not been the center of the topic growing up.
Hmm.
You know, so I was blessed. totally blessed. Holy Spirit convicted me when I was about 14 years old. I accepted Christ as my personal Savior, and me and a group of guys, we was going to, back then it was called Litchfield Junior High School.
Yeah.
My parents divorced when I was 14. About the time I'd been a Christian, maybe a year, maybe it was 13. They divorced 14, 15, somewhere along that. So just me and my mom over in East Gadsden. East Gadsden Baptist Church had an awesome ministry. They had like 12, 15 buses. A bunch of us guys would catch a bus, played basketball at East Gadsden Baptist. We had an awesome basketball team. We went and played state a couple of times. But we started carrying our Bibles to school at Litchfield. All of us, you know, we played football and baseball and basketball. And we thought we were going to change the world.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to change the world, you know. And we had impact on some guys, you know. But then when I got older and moved out, I tried all the things of the world. You know, being single at 17 years old and moved out on my own.
Sure.
You know, Satan to get a hold of you, and he did. But then I rededicated my life when after I got married and the birth of my first child, and been trying to walk a path ever since. And I'm like I said earlier, it's a choice you make.
Yeah,
you know, the Holy Spirit was convicting me the whole time I wasn't following Christ.
Mm.
He was Holy Spirit, and I knew better. I knew better. You know. Totally knew better, but you know, people got to try things, you know.
Yeah.
Mom and dad divorced. I moved out. I'm on my own. I thought adult decisions, and they wasn't real good adult decisions, but
yeah,
got married at 20 years old, and you know, had first child at 22, and we became real involved at First Baptist Glencoe. I was ordained as a deacon out there in 94. Worked with the youth, with the RAs and all. And then
RAs. Yeah.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. We did the RAs out there and all, and had a big, big group of guys. And so, had a lot of mentors out there at the church. I mentioned one of them that's right here close to your street, Jimmy Street. That's Jimmy Turner.
Yeah.
He was a ag teacher at Etowah.
Yeah.
Godly man. Godly man. And he, made sorghum syrup out there, and I'd always buy a bunch of sorghum syrup from him and give out to customers at Christmas, you know. But just, you know, faith is just something that was instilled in me as a young child, in the love of God, something my daddy taught me. And at a young age, I never forget it, I brought in $20 where I'd mowed 10 yards. And I said, "Look, Dad, I got $20. He goes, "Okay." He took $2 and put it over to the side, and he goes, "Well, you going to put that in the offering Sunday?" I said, "Really?" So he explained to me about tithing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's been dear to my heart. It was instilled in me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so as I thought,
I love hearing stories like that, man. The instruction of a father,
yeah,
you know, showing you the right way.
Yeah.
You know, that's a beautiful thing, man.
So, you know, raised my kids. They both got married out there at First Baptist Glencoe. That's actually where I got married. And then we joined the church. We was there 28 and a half years. And after that, went through a divorce and something that you don't ever want. But God has a perfect plan.
Yeah.
And people always said, "Well, that, you know," and I had some people talk real bitter to me during that divorce, claiming that, you know, I couldn't divorce. So
yeah.
I went to the pastor and sat and talked with him. And he explained to me about different types of divorces. There's a lot of different types of divorces that I was unaware of that he, you know, that he talked to me about. And then when you read the scripture, actually today, it was in one of my devotions about adultery.
Yes.
That's you can divorce from adultery. Mm-hmm. So that's what I went through, and didn't think I'd ever remarry again, you know. But the night that it all went down, I just fell on my knees. I said, "God, it's in your hands. I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do." So when I went and talked to the pastor, he goes, "Golly, you're blessing me more than I'm blessing you." He said, "How are you getting through this?" I said, "God's got this."
Yeah.
I don't need to. And Daddy always told me, he said, "Son, he put eyes in your head to look forward. Don't look back. Don't ever look back. Look forward." You got to go forward. So, you know, it was tough. I went through a tough time, but I'm a self-motivated type person that I get out, I do what I do and everything. But my youngest daughter gave me a phone number to a lady and said, you have to call this lady. I didn't want to date. I didn't want to do none of that stuff, man. I'd had 28 and a half years of a good marriage.
Sure.
She was a good person. She just had some issues. And so, you know, she was great to my kids. She did a great job as a mother and all that. So I really wasn't looking, but Lord brought Kim into my life. And we've been together 14 years, and she'd been divorced like 10 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So Lord blessed us. She went to Meadowbrook. I went to First Baptist Glencoe. Do you want to go to church with me? And I said, you can't go, hon. Satan will have a field day. Her family's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'll go to Meadowbrook.
Okay.
So she, you know, told me about a month after we're there. She said, I've been going here for 20-something years. You go a month, you know everybody.
So, yeah.
So they come to me and ask me if I'd come out there and greet. And so I've been greeting there ever since I've been there, I guess.
How long have you been greeting there?
14 years.
Oh, wow. 14, okay.
Yeah, 12, 14 years.
Okay.
You started with Flub. Did you ever know Flub Hartsook?
I know that name.
Awesome man.
Yeah.
Me and him had a ball outside.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah, but to me, that's just, and I told Randy one day, the pastor, we went to lunch, and he said, you know, man, I really need a lot more people like you out there. I said, well, I'm weird, Randy. I'm weird. I love cold calls, and I love people.
Yeah.
But my goal is this. When you get out of that car and you start toward the church, I want to break whatever shield you got. If you had a bad week, you had a bad night, you had a bad morning coming to church.
There you go.
Let's get a smile on them and let them get focused to hear the word.
Mm-hmm.
We need to, like an Etch-A-Sketch. We got all this stuff. Let's shake it up, get it cleared up. Let's go in there and worship the Lord
mm-hmm.
with an open mind. And that's my whole goal when people come up. Just to talk to them, make them smile. Let's get a smile at them before they go in.
Yeah.
Kind of break that barrier down, you know. So that's basically my life, man. I've always been one to pray and one to have faith, but I've not always went that way because of, you know, obvious reasons that choices I made.
Mm-hmm.
But God's got a plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
He saved me from a lot of different crazy stuff that I run with some guys, you know, that I made bad choices with.
Sure.
But nothing real bad, but still, it's just, yeah, I knew better,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then, you know, our Bible study, like the one your dad goes to with me on Monday night, I've been doing it 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
When we started it, there was about five of us.
It's grown pretty
big. Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
That's awesome.
And man, I think you got to have some accountability partners. Me and Phil Hodge was accountability partners.
Yeah.
He started coming to the church, and we started sharing our faith and different things. And so we talked every day. Every day, me and him talked. So,
yeah, we talk about that often here, having good men around you.
Yeah.
I think it's vital, man.
Oh, yeah. And I did. Growing up, my whole family.
Well, it's the example. They don't have to say anything.
Nothing.
It's how they live.
That's
and you see
it.
That and you walk alongside them. You're like, okay, even if you're a non-believer, whatever, you see that light and you're like, they're different. Like they have a peace about them.
Right.
They're different and very impactful. It's huge.
Yeah. But like Joey Clark, he and I, we're real close. We talk just about every day and we've become real close, you know? And so I just got some guys that, especially my Monday night Bible study guys, you know, we're just brothers. Man, when we close that door, you can say what you want to say. It's going to stay in that room. And that's what's good. Men can be men. They can let it go and talk about what they need to talk about.
Yeah.
You know.
Vulnerability.
That's it.
That's true relationship.
That's it.
That's true relationship. That's it. I want to talk about infidelity. You talked about infidelity and you said in the Bible different things. You know, infidelity isn't just sleeping with somebody else.
That's it.
There's, you know, that's a word, but it has lots of different meanings. And I think that's something a lot of people said they're not, you know, they have infidelity and then it might not necessarily sleep with somebody, but there's other ways to have infidelity in a marriage, emotionally and whatever else.
Oh yeah.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. It's a very real thing. You know, it's, whether you can have infidelity looking at porn or talking to somebody at your workplace and just saying some things,
right?
You know, and that's where you really have to, as a man, you got to keep them temptations. I pray every morning to keep me from have a Holy Spirit to surround me to keep me from temptation and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much out there.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to mention that, too. I mean, imagine when you were a kid. Like, how you had, you know, temptation. But yeah. Imagine now. Like,
oh,
the
God.
Kids now. It's like the exposure is just 1,000x.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
unbelievable.
You have the power of prayer, you have to have it. You have to have it. Because it's out there. And it's going to approach you. I mean, if you're on social media, if you're anywhere, that temptation will approach you. You know, used to had a couple of guys on the podcast, and you talked about, you know, to commit a sin, you had to get in your car and drive down to somewhere and then do an act or whatever you want to do. Now it's instant. I mean, just on your phone, you can touch something and boom, you're done. I mean, the amount of exposure has changed the world.
Yeah. Talking about my social media post, you know, I put scripture in different things that touch me. They all touch me. So I want to share them.
Sure.
A lot of times I send them to my life group. I still call it Sunday school, but they call it life group.
I grew up mad at Sunday school. Yeah.
It's Sunday school. And we got a group of guys that send ours that we're all on a text. So I'll send them some every once in a while, you know, but never forget, my phone rung one morning. I'm up at 5:20 every day. So about 6:30 one morning, my phone rung. And I looked down and I thought, I ain't talked to this guy in forever. I said, hey, bud, what's going on? He said, hey, I just want to tell you. He said, I just read one of your posts and said, I had planned all night to sin. That I had it lined up to go sin.
Mm.
He said, I just want you to know it hit me, and I really appreciate it. I thought, that's what it's for.
That's it.
If it could just, it's helped me. If it didn't help me, I wouldn't put it on it.
Right.
But it helped that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll help somebody else that I don't ever hear about. You know, there's a song out now that I don't know who sings it, but my dad, being a Southern gospel singer, I still listen to a lot of Southern gospel. And all the new contemporary is basically, a lot of them is old Southern gospel.
Recreated.
They just recreate things. But it talks about, you know, and Charlie brings this up a lot of times in our Bible study on Monday nights about the people that you prayed for and you did things for, you might not ever know it in this lifetime.
Yeah.
But when you get to heaven, you might be rewarded for that, for something you did that you never knew that come to full circle.
It all goes back to gardening, man.
That's it.
Planting the seeds.
That's it.
Just like sales, just like everything else, it's planting the seeds, man. And there's a quote about planting trees.
Yeah.
You know, you may plant a tree and never see it grow. You know what I mean? But it's for the generations beyond.
Right.
And so I think that's the same thing with faith. It's the same thing with everything else.
Right.
Planting seeds, very important.
And that's with my 6 grandchildren, you know, my prayer is that I've watched 3 of them get baptized, you know, and I got 3 other ones. And so I'm so proud of them in that, you know, that, and that's what I want. That's what I want. And I had my oldest grandson spend a night with me. It's been several years ago, and he come in there and he goes, hey, Pop, you read your Bible every day? Because I was in there reading the Bible and stuff when he come in. But, you know, that's what I remember as a child.
But that's it, though. He sees that.
That's all that matters.
You don't have to say a word.
I don't have to say
that much. Impact was done because of how you live.
Right. And that's what I try to do. Yeah, I'm a sinner. I fall. I stumble. I do it all. But we got to just pick ourselves back up, clean that slate. And I go back to the Etch-a-Sketch. When you wake up in the morning, you got all that mumble-jumble stuff. So why not to go to God's word to get in it, and whatever else you need to get into, devotions or whatever, take it clean, get cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Used to, when I used to get a newspaper every morning, I used to read the paper first, then read the devotions. And I had a guy ask me one time, I said something about it. He said, what'd you do that for? I said, trash in, good word comes in after it.
Mm-hmm.
Why read God's word and then read trash after that?
That's a good point. Very well said, man. Very well said. I didn't know your parents were divorced.
Yeah.
They divorced when you were 14 years old.
Yeah.
My parents divorced at 19 years old. So we're kind of similar in that realm. How did that divorce impact you as a kid? Because, you know, a lot of people say, too, we've talked about parents divorced when the child's 3 years old. So, like, they don't know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they do.
Well, they feel it. They feel energy. They might not know exactly, but they feel that. Tension and all that. But when you're older, you kind of know. What is worse, do you think, or is it all bad? What's your opinion on that?
I don't know. My sister was 16 when it happened, and I was either 13 or 14. I forgot exact age, but my mom never worked. So my mom had to go to work, and my mom put a lot of bitterness into me against my dad.
Yeah.
Because he met somebody else and all this. And so it took me a while to grow to love my stepmom. Because of the bitterness my mom had put in me.
Mm-hmm.
But then when my mom's last breath, my dad and stepmom was up there with her. I called my dad because as my kids got older, I told them, I said, we're not going all over the place. So y'all invited to our house, and they did. My stepmom apologized to my mom and everything. My mom would even go to the singings with my dad for my dad and them. So they grew, you know, so all the bitterness got out and all when the kids got a little bit bigger. So my kids, because my wife's parents were divorced, they thought everybody had four sets of grandparents.
Ah.
They racked up.
Yeah.
Christmas, birthday, and all
yeah.
But, you know, it was a struggle during Christmas and the holidays trying to run. So we just have one thing and they could all get along.
Yeah.
And they still talk about it today, about how all their grandparents got along.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people say that, like when your parents get divorced, you get to have a lot more stuff, but what do you lose?
Yeah. I lost my dad, and that was, because me and him was close,
yeah,
really close, and I remember him coming to pick me up on Saturdays, and I'd go spend the day with him. You know, it just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
It just never was the same.
It's not.
And that's why one reason I moved out, because I saw my mom struggle.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be a burden on my mom. So I just moved out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I always helped her out. She was always, you know, I just always kind of felt sorry for her because there she was. She was a housewife the whole time. So,
you know, coming as a kid from that, it's tough, man. I think you, as a parent, you have a responsibility. You know, and you got that you're an individual. You are an individual. When you have kids, man, I don't know. It's, you know, I'm kind of partial to the whole divorce thing. It's
I thank God that mine was after my kids were grown.
Yeah.
And married.
Yeah.
Thank you, God. Because, you know, and that's the thing. You're going to be the same way. Everybody's the same way that's been involved in parent divorce. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I said that all the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, I had 28 and a half years and you're going to have me. We done went through all that. Kids are out of the house. We're empty nest and then bam, you know.
Do you think saying that though, you know, a lot of people, because it's almost like if you say, I will never do something
don't ever say that.
Yeah. Because I feel like it changes. Something is changing there.
Right.
Like if you say that, it just changes something. And it almost makes you gravitate toward that.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I don't know what that is. Maybe a psychologist could explain, I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And that's what I used to have an aunt that said that all the time. She said, don't ever say never now.
Yeah.
Because you'll eat them words.
Yeah.
Every time you say something like that, you're going to eat them. You know, and I remember her saying that as a young child, but yeah, I was blessed growing up in a Christian home and, you know, we was there every time the doors opened.
Yeah.
We went to Old Country Church down in Blount County.
Oh, okay.
We got there first, living in Gadsden, and we drove down there. So, tell how old it was. We got there early, and if it was summertime, we'd raise the windows and put the fans out in pews. And if it was wintertime, we'd light the old gas heaters.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Yeah, that was a long
Daddy
time,
was
yeah.
what they call the song leader. You didn't have choir directors. Song leader.
Gotcha. Wow. Hymn book? All that? Dude, I miss the hymn book. And we don't crack it anymore.
No.
I love it.
Oh, I don't know.
And like people my age, they're like, we want these contemporary jumping songs.
Yeah.
I love hymns, man.
Oh, I do too.
You just think about hymns. How many generations have sang those same songs?
Yeah.
Powerful, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to have a choir director and we'd doing hymns and he would give you the meaning of that hymn before you sang it, why it was wrote, what it was wrote from, what kind of, if it was a tragedy or whatever it was, how did that song come about?
Mm-hmm.
Man, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like it's deep, man. Yeah, I feel like Josh Nichols. Do you know Josh Nichols?
Yeah, I know Josh.
Yeah, he was on the pod. Yeah, he was on the pod. He talked about songwriting, you know, he's in Nashville, and how kind of shallow it is now. You know, hymns are very deep. If you really sit, you can like, it's almost like scripture. You can really study it.
Yeah.
But songs now have kind of made a turn. Even, you know, 70s, 80s song. And it's like, it's just different now. Yeah. It's more visuals and like beats and stuff versus actual depth of meaning.
Right. And that's where I go back to the old Southern gospel songs. One of my favorite is Oh, What a Savior.
Yeah.
And The Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny Henson did one. They had a family called the Hensons, the singing Hensons, and Kenny had a voice that was unbelievable. It's called Gone, and it talks about being someone that nobody ever believed would turn the way that he turned to Jesus and all.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but you can call me anything, but you can call me gone when Jesus calls me. You know, and it's a great song. It's got a great meaning. It's the word, and that's what I like, is a word of the old Southern Gospels. The hymn. That's what they are.
Right.
That's all they are. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you need to answer that?
No.
Okay. All right. We're good.
On the way home.
All right. Cool. We're hour 17 in, dude. This is going awesome.
My wife said, I said, I'll be home by the time you get home. She said, you won't be.
Yeah. At least she knows.
Yeah.
At least she knows.
We finished.
Yeah, it's all good. We'll go by another 15 minutes or so. So church hurt. I don't know if you know about church hurt, but it's a big thing out here. A lot of people get hurt by the church and they say, no more. This is God that did this. I'm not going back and all that. And it's hard to separate the two. How do you get over church hurt? How would you help somebody? If somebody came to you and said, I've really been hurt by somebody in the church. We know it's an individual. It's not God that hurts you.
God
obviously, humans. Right, right. But if somebody approached you and said that, how do you approach them to healing?
Well, you know, we've had several that do that, jump ship, you know, that's gone to different places and all. I just always tell them that when you go to church, you need to go to church to be a blessing, not to get a blessing.
Yeah.
Try to be a blessing. That's my goal every Sunday. I want to be a blessing to someone. And if I'm not going to let a person run me away from God's house. And that's what you need to quit putting focus on people.
That's
you're
right.
There to worship God, not the people.
Yeah. It's for God. It's not for you.
You know, and I had one time I told a pastor about a situation. I said, hey, here's what this guy said. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. And I said, I just want you to know. You know, he got his feelings hurt, and he said, well, you mind if I use your name, if I say? I said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But he said it to me, and he said, thank you. He said, I get so many people come up to me and go, hey, so-and-so, but don't say I said anything.
Yeah.
I said, no, you can say I said it.
Yeah.
So he confronted the person, and the person kind of wanted to wiggle a little bit, but he didn't, and it all worked out. Because a lot of people, just like this, somebody says, hey, old Jarrett said so-and-so about you, that this and that. Well, I'm going to come and see Jarrett. I've always been that way.
Right.
I'm going to go see you and confront you.
Take some guts and character, though, and that's not very common.
But you'll get a changed story.
Yeah.
90% of the time, you'll get something to where they'll go, oh, no, I didn't. Well, you know, so-and-so said you did say that. Did you say that or not?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. If it's the truth, I ain't got a problem with it.
Right.
But, you know, but that's the biggest problem is the backbiting and all that stuff. And that goes on. You want to get your little cliques in these churches and all this stuff. We're all God's children.
That's
you
know? It. That's I mean, it. That's. Yeah, I never understood it myself. I include everybody, but yes, it's a real thing, cliques in churches. But I think a lot of people get hurt and they're just like, I'm out, you know, and it's hard. Yeah. Because that's real. I mean, they really, you know, we're human beings and we hurt each other.
Well,
you know, it's hard to do that.
I said I went First Baptist out here at Glencoe 28 and a half years. I raised my kids there. I never forget when one of the other churches was having a phenomenal youth program.
Was it Southside Baptist?
We want to go to it. We want to go to that church. I said, no. You can go visit. You can go with your friends. to do things with them. But your home church is here. So when they got older, they understood it. Mm-hmm. I don't church hop. I just never church hop.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I call them people, church hoppers. Well, yeah. When they got older, they understood. They went there their whole life. They got married there. So they got this whole era of being in church and being at the same church. You know, put into the church what you want to get out of it.
Yeah.
Everybody, all the churches are going to have something new, newfangled, or anything. You know, I could go on, but it's all about God's word.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think having a church home is important. You know, it's, you got to ground yourself somewhere.
And what do people do without a church family?
Yeah.
Our life group, Sunday school, whatever you want to call it, they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I call them right now. I call any one of them right now, and they'll be there for me.
Well, in reality, I think they're suffering. They're alone and they're suffering. If you don't have that, that's what you do. Right. I mean, you know, if you don't have community people,
and
that's just
what
you do.
How do you build stability in your kids?
Yes.
If you're church hopping.
Yeah.
What does that show your kids?
Agree.
Get my feelings hurt, I'm go. Like, growing up in East Gadsden, we didn't have nothing. But I had a lot of friends that their parents moved to Hope's Bluff and Glencoe.
Mm-hmm.
We never moved. But it's like me and a guy was talking the other day. Hope's Bluff and Glencoe derived from East Gadsden.
Yeah.
The athletes and all come from East Gadsden.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the generationals. I remember when they started moving out there.
Yeah.
My daddy wasn't going to move just to get me to play sports at another school. Come on. You know.
Yeah. 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 But the world has changed.
Yeah.
I will say now people, and we've talked about it often on here, there's not a lot of commitment.
No.
Marriage, buying a house, people don't commit anymore. No. I mean, that's just not a lot of cool thing to do.
Look at the transfer portal in a college football.
Right. Yep. That's the nature of the world. Commitment's not cool, man.
I mean, that's what my favorite saying, son, you play anything you want to. And I played baseball, football, basketball, started at about 5 and 6 years old, but you don't quit.
Yeah.
You don't quit. No matter how rough it gets, you'll never quit a sport.
Do you think that's healthy, though? In every situation, do you think that's healthy?
I think you need to finish the season out. Mm-hmm. You don't quit in the middle of a season. Mm-hmm. Nobody. I don't think you do.
Even if it's detrimental to you? I mean, are there some things you would say? If you're detrimental to your health in some way, or
well, maybe, you know. I mean, but you know, as a kid,
because I think that rigid, I agree with the statement. I agree with it, but that overly rigid upbringing sometimes can keep people in bad situations. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
yeah. But I agree with the statement. I do agree with it. Yeah,
but
I think sometimes, like even in marriage, like people say, you never get divorced. Well, there's people that are abused. There's people that are. You know, terrible situations.
Well, physical abuse and verbal abuse.
Exactly.
Or, you know, neglect.
Exactly.
Or loving one another.
Yeah.
You're neglecting it. Mm-hmm. You know.
So we never quit. We never get divorced, but in a terrible situation. See what I mean? So that saying, it's good and it is true.
Right.
Like you shouldn't just throw in the towel, but there are some situations where you need to get out.
Okay.
You
know? And it's like this. Okay. A man and woman. One of them cheats on the other one. How do you ever get trust back?
Yeah.
How can you go to sleep at night, laying there next to them, and not think about what went on?
It's the crumbled paper analogy. You crumble up a piece of paper, flatten it out. It'll never be.
Never.
I mean, you can heal, and I think there is healing, but it will never be the same. But Dr. Deloney, I mention him all the time. He talks about this. You have to build something new. Throw away that piece of paper. That marriage is over.
Yeah.
If you've done that marriage is over. We have to start at square one.
Yeah.
This is the new marriage now. Because once something like that is done, I don't think you can get that trust back.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's a big thing right there. The trust factor.
We were going to get into family, but I think we're going to finish up faith here. We've already went in almost an hour 30.
Yeah.
This has been awesome, dude. So we talked about the power of the modern worship. So we talked about hymns and all that.
Yeah.
We already thought, it's kind of flashy. Instagram. You know what I mean? You said you grew up in the Southern Baptist Church. I did as well. Love hymns. We already talked about that. What's your opinion on worship now being more flashy, more than actual reverence of worship to God the Father?
Well, first of all, I'm not a big fan of watching a screen or watching it on TV.
Yeah.
You just can't feel the presence of God. That's why you go worship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the church is the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got fellowship. That's what it's all about, is fellowship. And that's hard to do if you're watching a screen or you're watching it on TV.
I agree.
Sometimes we've had to watch it, you know, church, the COVID time.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Don't say that too much. Right. That might flag it, knock.
But
for real.
But it just, it bothered me.
Yeah.
I'm a people person. I want to be around people. I want to be with people like me. I want to be people that I fellowship with. I don't want to be one-on-one with a screen or a TV or something. That's just me.
Mm. Do you think that's a generational thing, or do you, I agree with you, but do you think that's more of a generational thing?
I think
thing?
It's more a generational thing.
Could be.
You know, there's nothing takes the place of fellowship.
Yeah.
True fellowship.
I agree.
You know, and I've got examples of just like with Randy, our pastor, you can go talk to him.
Yeah.
He's reachable. Very reachable. If you want to after sermon, I like that about pastor. When they get through, you can go, you know, when you're there at home looking at them on TV, it's done. It's done. You don't get to go shake hands with somebody or hug on somebody or see somebody you hadn't seen. That's what fellowship's all about.
Yeah.
And then when we go into the Sunday school, that's, you know, I got a buddy of mine tells me, he says, I get as much out of our Sunday school as I do the sermon. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You're supposed to get all that. Same way with, I got guys that say, man, I get so much out of Monday night, you know, because we probably have 60% of the guys there on Monday night that don't go to Meadowbrook. They're not all Meadowbrook guys.
Right.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
We got them from all different churches.
We have a basketball group that gets together on Tuesdays.
Yeah, yeah.
Some younger guys.
Yeah.
They do the old man too.
Yeah,
I don't know if
you've
been invited that, but yeah, they're not all Meadowbrook people.
See, that's,
I mean, it's
it
just
good,
community.
Man.
Yeah.
That's great fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
That is great fellowship.
Yep.
You know, and I really enjoy what we used to have called the Man Church. Now they're calling it Forge.
Oh yeah.
And that's really good.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But it's all about community. It's biblical. You know, you need to be a part of a community for
that's
sure
it.
Of people.
That's
uplifting,
it.
You're like, because you can't do it alone, man.
Right.
If you're alone, you suffer, man. You really
right.
do. We're meant to have community with other people.
I read a thing the other day that said, kind of, I forgot how the wording was, but it was saying basically watching church on TV is kind of like being married but never going home.
Yeah.
It was something to that wording, and I thought, boy, that's a home run right there.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I'm careful. I don't call out churches, pastors, whatever. I just speak from experience.
Right.
But you said the pastor's available. There's a lot of churches they're not.
You got that right. Yep.
And is that not the pastor's job?
He
to
just,
minister, the shepherd, the flock?
That's it.
Right?
That's it.
And so if they're not available, are they doing their job?
Right.
That's a question I have, truly.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I like from any pastor, and I've had a lot of them at, you know, in my past that speak the truth. And that's what I want. You know, and they'll say, hey, if you, something ain't right, call me out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, that puts him at our level.
Yes.
That's,
which is what they are.
Yes.
I think a lot of pastors now, it's like they are on a pedestal. That
right.
They're human just like us. Now,
right.
They have a calling, and
yeah.
They have a responsibility. Oh, of course.
And they have problems just like us.
They're human. That's right.
I had a pastor one time get in the pulpit and just cry because his daughter was going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And for him to be that transparent, that wasn't a dry eye in that church, and this is a big church.
Yeah.
But it made you see that, hey, he's just like us.
That's right.
You know, he struggles just like we do.
That's right.
And that's the thing about it.
That's right. Well, good stuff, man. We'll briefly appreciate you sharing your testimony, your faith and all that. Briefly talk about family. So you're married? How long have you been married now?
I've been married 14 years this time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
Six kids, six grandkids under the age of 15.
Oh, wow.
And four of them We have a birthday every month, the weekend of February.
Okay.
So we got one every week, the week of February. We got one in January, four in February, one in August. Blessed.
That's awesome.
We have a blended family. You know, she had two children. I have two children. We got six grandchildren, and just Lord blessed us. Man, we blended well together. The kids are awesome. They all got their own thing going, you know. So that's what me and her talk about a lot, is how we're so blessed that we could be like some of the other parents.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are in trouble or raising grandkids or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we're really blessed. You know, she was truly a godsend. He put her in my life. And when we first got married, we had a lot of crosses in every room. A lot of them represented Jesus Christ, but it reminded us how our lives crossed.
Mm.
She's from a divorce. I'm from a divorce. And our lives just crossed.
Yeah.
God put us together, you know, and that's how I got at Meadowbrook.
Yeah.
He was there. So I said, hey, I'll just go to church with you. So
beautifully said. Well said, man. So that's what I'm going to segue into. How do you find a wife? Times are tough, dude.
Well,
and I think good quality women, good quality men too,
yeah.
hard to find quality
yeah.
men, but especially quality yeah. women too. How do you find a good quality woman, Christ-like woman to marry?
Well, you know, my first wife, she was a Christian at a young age, and we got involved in the church, you know, really involved in the church when the kids got up. And I think that what brought us closer to Christ was our kids, getting them involved in church. But for me, going through that divorce, I didn't want to date. I didn't want to do nothing. I
yeah.
felt like I'd had 28 and a half years. Why did I need to do this again? You know, the kids are grown.
And you were how old at that time? Mid 40? 50?
Yeah, I wasn't 50 yet.
48, 49, yeah. something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah, 48.
Yeah.
Because I got married at 20, so I was 48.
Okay.
So my daughter, my oldest daughter, knew my wife, who I'm married to now, stepdad. They did some business stuff together. And so he was telling about what I went through. And he said, well, he needs to meet my daughter. So they brought the grandchild over one night, and they went to a ball game out here at Glencoe, and the first grandchild, and I was babysitting. Son-in-law come back, and he goes, hey, here's your phone number. You need to call this lady. Man, I ain't calling no one, because I didn't want to. I was done.
Yeah.
You know, put a fork in it. I'm through. So, but it's wild, though, the women that call you when they find out that you're single.
Oh, yeah.
Had some buddies over at my house watching a ball game. My phone rung, and I answered it. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I got off. What's that about? I said, she's wanting to cook me dinner, and she's I said, this is crazy, guys. These women are calling me. And I said, some of them's customers, some of them women I go to church with, blah, blah, blah. They said, well, you need to understand. You're a good person.
Yeah.
You treated your wife like a queen. You ain't got no kids in the house.
Yeah.
And you work. You got a house.
That's platinum right there. That's platinum.
So, we laughed about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sitting there one night and the walls are falling in and just coming in on me. I'm just by myself, you know, and my kids had put me on Facebook because of the grandkids.
They
said, Dad, you need to be on Facebook. So, but my oldest daughter lives in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, up to Chattanooga. And she had a little boy then, just a new, well, I don't think she'd had him yet, but she was living out of town. So anyway, they told me. So I saw that piece of paper laying there, and I opened it up. I got her name. So I put her name into Facebook. Well, it wouldn't come up, you know, because she wasn't on there, or I was putting her name in wrong or something.
Yeah.
So finally I did, and it was a picture of her and her daughter. I thought, wow, this lady's pretty. You know, she looks really nice, you know. So anyway, her stepdad called me. He goes, hey, I need a pressure washer. I said, okay. So I go down there. When you go call my daughter? I said, what? He goes, ain't you got that phone number? They had all these pictures on his desk, you know. And I said, well, which one is she? I ain't got no picture, but here's her kids, you know. So anyway, one night I called her. We talked about 2 hours and shared our testimonies.
Wow.
Awesome. Just talked about our love for family, She'd been divorced, raising them kids by herself, doing an awesome job.
Yeah.
Just an awesome job. Her work ethic, her love for Christ. I mean, just everything that kind of hand in hand. So we talked. So I finally asked her out. We go out on a date and everything. And we start dating, and we're pretty serious. You know, we're talking and everything. But I'm at 48 and a half years, 48 years old, 40. No, I'm close to 50. I'm right at 50. Yeah. And she's 7-8 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Nurse working down there and all that. So we're talking more and more. And we decided not to sleep with each other till we got married.
Great.
We said, you know, if this is God's will, let's do it right.
Mm-hmm.
If this is going to be God's will, let's do it right.
Mm-hmm.
So we made an agreement that we wanted to do it right.
That's great.
And have a, you know, and we've been blessed. Although she took a lot of static from some of her coworkers.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. But to me, it just kind of like when you're in high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just I've the butterflies there. And everything, just excitement.
Oh, yeah.
And we just, everything just worked out, man. God's plan just put us together, and man, it's been a blessing.
That's awesome. You know, man.
So sometimes you got to go through them old storms, man.
Oh, yeah.
To get through stuff. But I really didn't have a storm. I had a great life.
Yeah.
You know, so
100%.
God, you know, but family, we're big on family. Oh, we're big on family. We do a lot of family stuff, you know, so we're, me and her both. And that's what I told her. I said, look, I'll never get between you and your kids, and you'll never get between me and my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there for your kids. And she, I mean, we were dating, and the kids and the grandkids now, you got to realize the oldest one was only 6-7 months old when we started dating.
Mm.
But they love her with all her heart. You know, they think that she's it.
Awesome. So how you do you know? Find a good, like if you had a son, he's 22, getting out of college,
yeah.
doesn't have a girlfriend, nothing like that. What would you say to him? How do you see a woman that's good? How do you pick out a good one?
I think you go on communication. You got to communicate with them.
Mm.
I think so. I think you got to open up to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what she and I did. We laid it all on the line.
Yeah. Well, vulnerability. Saying this is who I am.
This is me.
Yeah.
This is what I've been through.
Yeah.
What you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I told her, I said, here's one thing about it. I'll never look down on you, and you'll never have to look up to me. We're equal. Because when God took the rib out of Adam, the purpose was to put them side by side.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look eye to eye. I'm the head of my household, and she respects that.
Right.
But we're equal.
And some people take that kind of extreme, like the head of house, the man's in charge and all that. That's, that can be kind of extreme. That's not really what that means biblically.
Right. Mm. Well, there are three kind of men in this world, henpecked, liars, and alone. So
say that again.
Henpecked, liars, and alone. Yeah. My daddy would always say, I'm not henpecked, but I got hen house ways.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But you know, it's all about equal.
Yeah.
We discuss things, we talk about things. I trust her. She trusts me. We don't hide nothing.
That trust is built through the vulnerability.
I think
if you're not vulnerable, you don't know who the person is.
Right.
And I think that is what scares people today to death.
It is.
Because if you're vulnerable, you can stab me in the back. But that is what relationship is. I'm giving you the ability to stab me in the back. That's what a vulnerable relationship is. But it has to have it to survive.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And it's all about partnership.
Yeah.
What is a marriage? A marriage is a partnership.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And, you know, and respect. Number one thing is respect.
Yep.
You know, I know that she don't like unloading a dishwasher, so I unload the dishwasher.
There you go.
I know things that she, you know, she's OCD to a great extent on everything in our home. It's always spotless, always beautiful. And I know that. So it's made me a better person.
Yeah.
You know, so I try to keep things in order so that, you know, I just try to make things, and she does me too. you know.
But that reciprocation of sacrificing for each other, that's what love is.
That's it.
That's what love is.
That's all it is.
And that's the compliment. That's what makes you both better and makes the relationship grow and all that. Right. Beautifully said.
Yeah. But, you know, that's my story. And I'm going to stick to it.
Yep. Yep. I think we're going to wrap it up, dude. We're probably already over an hour and a half in there, but we're going to end with this.
Okay.
5, 10, 20-year plan. And 20-year plan, that's a good ways away for you.
Yeah.
You'll be in your 80s. But 5 years from now, where do you see yourself?
Doing the same thing I'm doing now. I'm going to be working. I'm going to be selling. I'm going to be, you know, age is just a number. I'll be 65, but a lot of times I think I'm still in my 40s until I do something outside a lot of. You know, then I realize, hey, I'm not. But far as long-term plans.
Well, let me say this. I don't even think we said what you do now, like what you sell. Can you say what you sell now?
Yeah, I'm more like a.
Because we started talking about golf and we got distracted.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. Sales, I sell a lot of things. I'm kind of like a rep, independent type rep. But I sell cleaning supplies, cleaning equipment, pressure washers, floor equipment. I sell
industrial.
Okay. Forklift, material handling things, and then some industrial parts and different type things. So I kind of got a toolbox that's got a lot of stuff in it. When I walk in, I could sell a company from the front door to the back door.
If they need it, you got it.
I got
it. Awesome, awesome. So 5 years more with the same 10 years. You think it's much of the same? You'll be. Pretty much 75.
Yeah, about 75. Got my health. Why not?
Yeah.
I got a buddy right now that's 74 years old and loves life. Works, you know, like my former father-in-law was a great golfer. He said, son, I'll never forget, when I retired from Goodyear, I'm going to play golf every day. He said, that lasts about 2 weeks.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, you got to have something really, like laying on the beach. It'll be cool for a week or two, and then you're like, I have no purpose.
Right.
Like, that is our human nature, like to have purpose and all that.
That's like when Phil Hyde retired. I mean, when he retired, you know, he had his routine of going to his office and doing this and doing that and going to the gym every day. Well, he stayed his routine to the gym, but he had 30 acres. He mowed grass all the time.
Yeah.
But he liked doing it.
Yeah.
So, if he liked doing something, you know, that's like my wife. She plays golf, so me and her play golf, you know, so... I got perks for working out there. Mm-hmm. So we have a good time. And that's something we'll probably do. She'll probably retire in 10 years. She'll probably retire.
Mm-hmm.
So when she does, I'll probably slow down to 3 days a week, maybe.
Sure.
You know.
And that's the thing about, you know, if you retire, you don't have to quit. Like maybe you cut back to part-time or whatever.
You know, I probably had more sales during COVID when nobody would see you than ever.
Yeah.
Because I was doing everything over the phone and emails.
You know Adam Stanfield?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's sales.
Yeah.
And that's what he said. He said he got a little creative, had to get more creative with selling, but he said he killed it during COVID.
Oh, I did too.
Because they'd call and say, you have 100 pallets of this. And he's like, yeah. He's like, they're like, I want it. And they just buy it.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't have to even go sell. They were coming to him.
Right.
So it was a different time for sure. So 10 years, cool. 20 years. Being the 80s. Have grandkids that are grown at that point, probably.
Yeah.
What's life looking like? What do you think?
I don't know. Don't know. Don't really have a plan. Will I still be in sales? I don't know. I might be. I'll be over there with your dad at the Way of the Cross more.
Yeah.
You know, that's been a blessing to me. I sat on a board for that. Me and Mark Thompson.
Well, Mark Thompson, he told me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. Took my granddaughter over there for Christmas.
Yeah, Way of the Cross is soup kitchen for those that don't know, right?
Yeah.
Soup kitchen.
We feed people 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Hot meals.
Yeah.
Hot meals. Took my granddaughter over there, the Christmas party they had. She came home and told her mom, she said, wow, I didn't realize I had it made.
Yeah. Very impactful statement there. You don't realize how good you got it till you see go and see other people.
That's right.
If you stay within your house all the time and don't get out and see how people really, it's a whole world out there, man.
And you don't know till you get over there and look and see. You never know what's going on in Gadsden, Alabama.
Yeah.
How many people are wanting a hot meal?
In your own back door.
That's it.
Yeah. And we just go drive to restaurants and eat it. But there's people just a walk away that are homeless, struggling, all that. But yeah, but I think that's biblical too. Got to be there for those people, for sure, for sure.
Thank you for having me, brother.
Randall, this is awesome, dude. Again, it's a valuable podcast. Episode 28, we killed it, man. I appreciate you guys. That is it. The podcast, The Better Man with Dr. Jerry Nelson. Thank you so much for watching. We're on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. You'll get every single one of my notifications. The shorts, the clips, everything that is posted during the week sent directly to you. We are on every single audio podcast streaming service. Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcast. Give us that 5-star rating because we give 5-star service. Thanks for watching. Until the next one. Peace.